Welcome to the Brisbane Property Podcast with your hosts Melinda and Scott Jennison from Streamline Property Buyers, your local Brisbane property specialists.
Hello everyone and welcome to the this episode of the Brisbane Property Panel. I'm joined today by some very special guests and I'll just throw a quick intro there just so everyone knows. So obviously talking about property, I think we've got some very, very important people here that can teach you a little bit and something to learn about property. So Antonia Mercarella, who is the CEO of the REIQ, welcome.
Thank you so much.
And I will jump to Melinda next because Melinda is obviously Director at Streamline Property Buyers and also the President of REBA, the Real Estate Buyers Agents Association. And down the far end, Nicola McDougall, who is the Chair of PIPA, the Property Investment Professionals of Australia. And the reason I left you to last, Nicola, was just to say congratulations on your recent award with the REB Awards as the Industry Thought Leader of the Year.
Thank you.
That's massive.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you. It was a real thrill and nice to have someone from an industry association being recognised in a forum like that because we don't get much time on podiums and certainly not those of us that are volunteers for associations. So it was wonderful moment for me professionally, but also for the association too.
Yeah, you do a lot of work, as does everyone here in the panel. So it's good when people get recognised for the work that they put in and their passion for this industry that we're all involved in. So tonight we're going to talk about basically investing in property. And I think there's a lot of big topics here we can jump into and bounce between each other. Melinda will probably start us off with some of the biggest risks.
Yeah, and I think that the topic for tonight really is to draw on the experience of those of us in the room here around the risks associated with property investing in the current environment here in Southeast Queensland, but also on the counter side of those risks, looking at the opportunities that those or the current circumstances bring, because there's been a lot of change in the industry over recent years and it's led us to a position that we're in now where we've got really tight supply, we've got tight vacancy rates, we've got rents growing, we've got property prices growing. It's challenging out there, you know, for people that are, you know, in the market to rent properties, but it's also challenging for property investors who have been beat up a little bit over recent years. And there's no better sort of panel guests to have here tonight than Antonia, who can speak a lot in relation to the legislative change that has been proposed, that's been implemented, and also that's yet to come. But also we've got Nicola, who's able to speak on behalf of property investors in terms of what's been happening to property investors recently and why are we seeing this trend occurring. So they're the sorts of topics that we're going to dive into tonight.
So obviously, as Melinda said, there's the risk and the challenges, and there's also the opportunities. So we'll bounce around a little bit between them and obviously touch on a lot of things. So Antonia, there's a lot of challenges, a lot of things that are happening. Obviously, up front with political agendas and things like that, policy changes having a big impact.
Yeah, I think particularly when we look at what's happening here in Queensland, we've seen this wave of legislative change. We've gone through four rounds of legislative change in as many years. And of course, we've just seen the Miles government announce yet another raft of proposed legislative changes. This constitutes stage two rental law reforms. And I think really when you look at that, it's the cumulative effect that has, I think, on an investor and their psyche, both investors who are already own property and perhaps also prospective investors, those who are thinking about investing. And it's really interesting because I think when we talk about the impact that legislative change has on investors, often we're criticised for speaking from a position of self-interest. And I think we've got to recognise that will come. But we are hearing from people on the ground. We get a lot of correspondence from investors. We get a lot of information, as you can appreciate, given who we are, passed on to us from property managers. There's no doubt that it is spooking investors. That's not something we're making up. And I think really it's that it's that lack of stability that it creates when, because I think we all recognise that there needs to be a statutory framework, and it's really important that tenants have a certain level of security and have certain protections. So we're certainly not saying that it should be left unregulated, but I think when you look at this level of constant change, it does get to a stage where I think property owners are feeling the fatigue associated with that.
And I think, you know, off the back of what you've said, Antonia, Nicola, what has your association found? I mean, Pippa does some amazing research, but what have some of those results shown, especially in relation to Brisbane and southeast Queensland?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Melinda. We run our annual sentiment survey, investor sentiment survey, in August every year, with results published in September. And we had our ninth survey last year. I can't believe we're nearly around and up to another year. But last year, you know, the statistics said that I think it was about 23.3% of investors indicated in the survey that they'd sold at least one investment property in Brisbane, right? That was number two, but only just after Melbourne. But when you actually added together the number of investors who said that they had sold an asset here in Brisbane and also in regional Queensland, it was nearly 40%.
Wow.
And it was so therefore, in regards to state-based, that was number one by a long stretch. Of course, the year before, similar results as that. Mm. And the last couple of years, you know, the number one reason why investors are saying that they're selling is generally, well, the number one and two reasons is generally changing legislation, right? Mm. The threat of new legislation, such as a few years ago, the Queensland Interstate Land Tax, you know, a huge raft of rental reforms, not only here in Queensland, but in other locations, and especially Victoria, but also the threat of new sort of new expenses, duties, levies. These two things are really weighing heavily on current investors. And I think, like Antonia mentioned, it's with people that are, you know, selling their assets, but it's also preventing those people who perhaps may have become investors, they're deciding not to do that either. So we are really seeing that investors have had enough, I guess, in a way. And certainly after COVID, many of them are deciding perhaps to reduce their overall borrowings and exit the market.
It's interesting, and I know we've talked about this before, about the investors moving out of the market, and we've got the shortage of accommodation for people. And a lot of people talk about the big bad landlord that lifts up rents and does all those things. Obviously, there's a lot of pressure on them. There's interest rate rises, all those types of things. At the end of the day, they're providing shelter, which we need, but yet they shouldn't be punished so much, obviously, for providing the shelter.
And I wonder, I'd be interested for your take on this, Antonia, but, you know, you and I have been doing this, we all have at this table, been involved in this for a long time, but certainly from an industry association point of view, you know, decades of experience here in Queensland, you know, between Antonia and myself, I don't think I've ever seen it this bad. I mean, we've seen some really interesting things over the years together, but I certainly don't remember a time where the attacks on investors have been so prolonged and so prevalent in all of the, you know, since 2006 when I actually started working at the REOQ. So there are always moments in time where these things come up and new legislation is either threatened or enacted, but I don't recall a time where it has been invasive, I suppose, you know, on top of a number of reasons why investors actually haven't been buying in the same numbers as they historically have, sort of in the last 8-9 years, here we are with a rental crisis, which is just getting deeper and deeper.
It's interesting, something we're observing on the ground is that a lot of properties that are selling come with a tenant in place, and quite often there's buying opportunity in that space because the majority of the market in Brisbane that are looking to buy are owner-occupiers. So for every property that sells, potentially, you know, there's a narrative that it takes a first home buyer out of the rental market and into, you know, a property to buy. But that's not always the case because we have this really strong interstate migration. We've got international or, you know, overseas migrants also entering the landscape. So it's not just a replacement of one for one. We actually need more housing. And from what we're seeing in some of the survey results, we're actually seeing a reduction in potentially the rental stock that's available. And therefore, is it any wonder the vacancy rates are so tight and rents are on the way up? I think the narrative quite often is that, you know, as landlords, we're greedy because we're increasing rents. But at the end of the day, rents are only driven by the balance between the supply of rental properties and the demand for those rental properties. And a tenant will pay what it takes to find themselves a home and find themselves accommodation. So again, it's the narrative that's actually put forward in the media potentially, but I think there's a lot of commentary even outside of the media around the greedy landlord. And I think that narrative really needs to stop if there's going to be a way that we resolve the current issues, because we're not really creating any more housing to keep up with the demand. And Antonio, you'd know the figures in terms of state government contribution. What contribution do the government make to, you know, rental properties here in Queensland?
Yeah, I think you've mentioned a few points that I think are really noteworthy. First of all, I think we have to acknowledge the fact that, to Nicola's earlier point, we have never seen vacancy rates as low as what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. We are absolutely in uncharted territory. We can see at the moment there are various places in Queensland where the vacancy rate is sitting sub 1%. Mm-hmm. And it's really hovering at around 1.5%. To give your viewers an understanding of what we classify as a healthy market, it's a vacancy rate that sits somewhere between 2.6 up to 3.5%. So we are worlds away from a healthy market. Mm. That's the first thing I'd say. And the reason why we are seeing rents escalate is absolutely because there is a mismatch between the number of people out there looking for a rental property and the number available. So certainly that's market forces driving up rent. The second thing I'd say is, to answer your question, Melinda, we know that government probably provides around 3 to 4% of housing for the community. The vast majority of rental properties on the permanent rental market are provided by private investors. Mm. So I think that's a really important point to make. And again, you mentioned earlier on this very simplistic characterization that we often hear about, which is, if investors sell, so when Nicola talks about those results, people will often say, well, that's a good thing. We want investors to sell so that first-time buyers can get that all-important foothold. So I'll say a couple of things about that. First of all, that's too simplistic a view. That's not the way it always works. We've actually got the lowest rates of home ownership in the nation here in Queensland, which I think is a fairly, it's a disappointing statistic. So we do have a higher rental population, as you would expect. And this idea that if an investor sells, it will immediately mean that a renter can buy that property, that's often not, sometimes that happens. Mm. I'm not saying it never happens. Mm. But often what we do see, particularly in the last few years, is that it is being snapped up by either another investor potentially, or it's being snapped up by someone who's come from interstate, or even someone who's come from overseas. Mm. Or in some cases, we are actually seeing some people say, I own this investment property, but I'm not going to keep it on the permanent rental market anymore. Mm. And there are some people who are in a financial position to make that decision, and they may leave the property empty, or they may decide that it's more commercially lucrative to put it onto the short-term rental market as well.
And that in itself is interesting, because I know the local government here in Brisbane has tried to disincentivise those that are making their properties available for short-term rental by increasing the rates payable for those that are, you know, Airbnb-ing their properties. But at the end of the day, you know, they're trying to, I guess, legislate the way a property owner is able to use their property, or the way they're actually going to be generating income for their property. And the disincentive, I guess, is very limited, and so potentially not something that's having an impact at all on removing that from the permanent market.
Indeed, and just to follow on with what Antonia was saying, just in reference to our survey last year, the investors that sold, only 24% of those investors indicated that it was another investor who'd bought that dwelling, right? What was really interesting is that the previous year the survey showed it was 33%.
Right.
So you've got that massive drop, you know, just in that space of time. And, of course, last year when we had when the survey was open, we were in the midst of that hugely rising interest rate environment. It actually hadn't peaked yet, but, you know, none of us knew where it was going to finish. So there was a lot of, you know, hesitancy, and also a lot of investors just simply not able to access the finance to do anything anyway. But certainly our survey also, like, we ask investors, what have you done in the last 12 months? You know, nearly 13% around the nation said they'd sold at least one dwelling around the nation. What was the scariest statistic in that survey, though, for me, and it should be for, you know, the wider supply of rental accommodation in this country, is that the previous year, about 19% of investors in the survey said that they were likely to sell a dwelling in the year ahead, an investment dwelling in the year ahead. Now, of those 19%, about 13% actually went ahead and did that. In our survey last year, that number was around about 38% of investors who said that their intention was in the next 12 months to sell at least one dwelling. So that's double the amount of investors in the previous year. So, you know, the survey evolves, and there are a number of questions in there this year, which I won't disclose on your show today, that are going to hopefully provide some of these data sets, which we are seeing a lot of conjecture about. You know, this year's results could be the most horrific yet, I fear.
It's interesting, and I'd love to sort of see data in the breakdown of who's selling in what locations as well, because of course in the post-COVID boom we saw record low interest rates, money was practically free, it's never been that cheap to borrow, so we saw a lot of buyers come into the market, and we saw a lot of investors, especially interstate investors, position themselves throughout southeast Queensland. And they were really chasing cash flow. And in an environment when you've got very low interest rates, achieving a strategy or a position that's cash flow neutral or cash flow positive was actually easy. Now we've got a situation where interest rates have normalized. And of course, you know, those of us that have been in the profession for many, many years understand that interest rates fluctuate. They'll go up and down. But certainly a lot of newer entrants are really promoting this high cash flow strategy. And Southeast Queensland was on the radar for a lot of those investors. It would be interesting to see how many of those have become more distressed sellers. And I know that there's no real indicators that are showing that there's a lot of distressed selling, because people would typically let go of those assets before they become a distressed seller. But I'd love to understand the data breakdown in terms of, you know, are they in the locations where potentially they've chased cash flow, and now that interest rates are a lot higher, they're realizing it's now costing them to hold, but they may be in a location where they're not actually getting that strong price pressure to see that capital growth, because ultimately investing is about long-term, you know, low-risk investing rather than chasing those short-term returns. And I think we saw a lot of that throughout Brisbane and southeast Queensland as a whole through those post-COVID boom years.
Obviously, the risk side and the challenge side, we're probably focusing a little bit early on. Antonia, did you say a healthy vacancy rate about 2.6%?
2.6 up to 3.5%.
Wow.
So what we've seen historically in Queensland is that we'll go through patches where we see really tight vacancy rates. So if you think about the resources boom, places like Gladstone, for example, we saw vacancy rates get really low. So certainly we've seen very low vacancy rates before, but usually we'll see them in a concentrated area, whereas what we're seeing now is really low vacancy rates pretty much across all corners of Queensland. Interestingly, though, regional Queensland is where we're seeing really tight vacancy rates, and that's been the case for some time now.
It's interesting that's what caught my attention, because we do our podcast monthly and we do a market update, and I can't remember the last time I saw those numbers. A long time ago.
Maybe the first year of COVID when things got a little...
Maybe then elevated.
in some areas like South Brisbane or something like that, they shot up a little bit for a brief moment of time.
That's why it caught my attention.
So what is interesting is this panel will remember not that long ago, Do you remember everyone was talking about the glut, the apartment glut?
Oh, yes.
And so we did see that certainly in Inner Brisbane in particular and in other parts of Brisbane, we did see those vacancy rates for apartments and units. They did
increase.
They did increase. Yep. And they were in a market where it was very much a renter's market. And, of course, we were seeing lots of incentives. But interestingly, even in that market now, it's actually tight as well.
It is.
So I think it really talks to the fact that we've done a really bad job of keeping up. The supply has not kept up, not just in the sales space. We see it across both the property, across the rental market, but we're also seeing that in the sales space as well, where the number of buyers is far exceeding the supply. And this is part of the challenge we have in Queensland. We have not done a good job of keeping up with our growing population. Mm. And then add to that the pressure that COVID has added in terms of interstate migration, all of those people coming over from New South Wales and Victoria. And it's all been the perfect recipe for the disastrous situation we find ourselves in. Mm. And, of course, a few natural disasters in the mix, as we're accustomed to in the Sunshine State.
Yep.
That hasn't helped.
So while we're on that topic then, and I know going back when we talk about the unit supply, the end of 2016 was a massive oversupply of units. The construction industry, there's a lot of pressure on the construction industry at the moment. What's coming? What's in the future for the housing and for that construction side of it? What is going to come in Southeast Queensland?
Well, I wish I could say that there's good news on the horizon, but it's really difficult to see a positive news story in that space. What we know is that we've got ongoing supply chain issues. Construction is very expensive in Queensland. On those very large scale projects, anything really that effectively involves a crane in the sky, we've seen figures that indicate that it's about 30% more expensive, and that's for a range of reasons. And the reality is we don't have access to the tradies that we need. So we've got this problem that continues to grow, where there's still really strong demand and there doesn't seem to be a pipeline ahead to indicate that we're going to solve that problem anytime soon. And this is why we're seeing a housing summit, regular roundtables being hosted. It's why we're all talking about this topic. We've just seen the government announce Homes for Queenslanders, which is a 5-point plan. Some of it is centred around creating new supply. And the principles of that plan, I think we can all agree, are really sound, but it's really difficult to see how we're going to actually implement that plan and develop all of this new these new dwellings that we so desperately need.
Mm. It does seem to be a lot of jawboning going on, doesn't there? Like, you know, whether it's at federal level or state or local, there's a lot of chit-chat. And not a lot of action. Really. And there seems to be as well, you know, investors are so often, you know, the low-hanging fruit in regards to the blame game. But, you know, state governments in particular are very good at hiding the fact about their, you know, their lack of funding social housing for the last two decades. Mm. And not only were they not doing that, they're also selling off the stock that they did too to make their bottom lines look better. So it's, you know, very easy to blame investors or, you know, all of the... What's going on? Well, it's COVID. COVID caused the rental crisis, seemingly. You know what I mean? But it was actually in play for many years, as we've talked about before. Before that, not just in Queensland. So it's a plethora of bad policy decisions that have made us get to where we are today. You know, I mean, there are some good policies out there, obviously, but until we actually see some action on them, some things actually coming out of the ground, you know, they're not worth the paper it's written on.
How long are we going with the COVID for? Because it was COVID-19 and we're 2024 now.
2020.
It's really, you know, I mean, obviously, look, there's no debating the fact that you certainly, in regards to movement of humans around the nation, that has had a massive impact. Yeah. Yeah. you know, on demand, and now clearly with that million new Australian, you know, residents coming into the country, that has had a huge impact. But in regards to the issues, the fundamental issues that we have in the rental market, they started to appear from 2015 onwards.
Antonia, I know you've been doing a lot of lobbying with the state government around housing policy. What impact are we likely to see with the election that's coming up this year here in Queensland?
Well, look, I think in the lead up to any election, let's be honest, it becomes a bit of a frenzy, doesn't it? The closer we get to that October election date that we're expecting. I think what we've been seeing, further to Nicola's point, disturbingly, we have seen the state government making a lot of really negative comments about property managers, about investors. We've seen it, both our housing minister and our new premier referring to dodgy and unscrupulous practices. And I think that's really to deflect the blame, frankly. Mm. I think what we're going to continue to see is more announcements. So Homes for Queenslanders is the latest plan that's been announced. Again, lots of great talk in that. We'd like to see the how that sits behind it. Mm. What's the roadmap look like? How are we going to actually implement that change that's been canvassed in there? And then I think the next thing we'll continue to see is this legislative change, this continued focus on how can we make renting fairer. But the reality is none of that fixes anything. And I think really, I think the challenge here is that we know that there's hurt in the community. I don't think anyone on this panel, I don't think any decent human being wants to see tent cities emerging.
Not at all.
And I think we'd all agree that shelter is imperative. I think we've got this difficulty, though, when there is such a shortage and there are so many people in this state of crisis, and Nicola talked about that growing list of people waiting for social housing, you've got this pressure cooker environment. Mm. And then you've got someone who owns an investment property that actually is an asset. And I think sometimes that becomes almost an offensive term in the context of homelessness. And so there seems to be this, conflict between those two concepts. And so what we end up seeing is this demonisation of anyone who owns a property and is trying to charge market rent for that property. Mm. And I think that's really unhelpful. They're not the conversations we should be having. And we've said to the government many times, we want to work in a productive fashion. Sometimes there's a perception that the property industry wants these type vacancy rates, that it's commercially lucrative. I don't think anybody wants to be operating in this pressure cooker environment. We like healthy vacancy rates when there's a pretty good equal bargaining power between tenant and owner, and you can conduct your business in a more in a fashion that's actually manageable and sustainable, because what we're going through at the moment is not sustainable. We're seeing property managers leaving in droves, we're seeing investors throwing their hands up and making a decision not to sell, we're seeing people who might be thinking about investing deciding it's all too hard. None of those things fix the problem on the ground that we have at the moment. The only way that we can address that problem is by focusing on more supply. And that's where we need to be putting our energy.
And also that more supply is investors, you know, so it is encouraging those investors who are, you know, in the market to stay in the market. It's encouraging those investors who potentially are considering entering the market to do so, because, you know, like Antonia just said, many of them are not interested. And part of the major problem that we have at the moment is the volume of investors that have sold. So we certainly just don't have, we don't have the new supply available because of the construction issues, but it's actually about, you know, investors deserting the market and reducing that supply of rental accommodation even more.
I just wanted to add one quick point to that, which is this. It's really interesting that we are seeing the government really focused on build-to-rent initiatives. Now we're not against build-to-rent initiatives. There's a place for it in the market. But these are institutional investors.
That's right.
So the government is happy to introduce initiatives that incentivise build-to-rent schemes, institutional investors, big business effectively, and yet they're very happy to sling mud at private investors, everyday Australians who invest. So I find that really fascinating, and I'm not sure what the rationale behind that is.
And in Queensland as well, it's a bit of an outlier around the country in that it charges more stamp duty for investors. For what reason? Who knows? But as an investor here in Queensland, you will pay more on stamp duty than you would as an owner-occupier, and that is not the case in all states around the country. So, like Antonia said, I certainly believe that build-to-rent has a role to play. That ain't happening anytime soon, though.
No.
But incentivising developers with institutional investors with deep pockets, but they're not prepared to provide any incentives to the people that supply, 90%. Of rental properties in the country.
Yeah. As you talk about the, let's call them the mum and dad investor side of things, and look, I would probably put my hand up and Melinda and I and say, look, we're a part of that. I still see opportunity. So if I look on the other side of it and I look at especially Brisbane, which is where we focus, I think there's massive opportunity for people to invest into Brisbane because we're getting the migration, we're getting the growth, and there's good capital growth side of things on properties where if you buy in the right locations, I think there's a real positive there for people to say, you could rent your property out, buy an investment property, you will rent it out, especially at the moment, with the vacancy rates we're talking about, but I still see great opportunities on that side for investors.
100%, and I think I've been on the record about this before. We know that investors are leaving. I don't think they should be. We know that, investors who normally would transact aren't. I think they should be, and certainly here in Queensland, as someone who is Brisbane-based and owns properties here in Brisbane too, the opportunities are extraordinary here. I think perhaps it's a result of, it could be some investors who are a bit older, and we don't know the age of these investors who are selling, which is another data set which I wish existed. But perhaps it is the older generations who are wanting, they're getting close to retirement. Who knows?
Yeah.
COVID might have spooked them as it spooked a lot of people. But there's certainly a lot of opportunity here in Queensland and certainly in Brisbane for investors. And those investors, I would like to think, as we see more and more investors working with experts such as yourselves, I'm sure that part of your communication with your clients is about all of these things. Yeah. But, and as I think investors become more educated and more sophisticated around the country, they're working with PIPA members, they're understanding things a lot more, they educated themselves, I think that will be helpful for the stable supply of rental accommodation because people will understand that we always have peaks and troughs of markets, but also of legislation. We always have times like this. And it's about riding out those times and recognising opportunities when they're in front of you and acting on them. But then when you do have moments when in the media there's a lot of bad stuff or whatever, or even if there's a new policy which is not great, at the end of the day it's about what's happening in the decades ahead, not what's happening right now.
Yeah, I spoke to a, it's interesting you say that, I spoke to a fellow the other day that called us for work to engage our services. 36-year-old with a wife. I think he said he had 4 investment properties already. Wants to buy another one. Wants to keep that mindset. It rang to my ear. I thought it was great. I hopped off the phone feeling really positive because there was someone thinking that way to say, I want to buy more investment properties. And he said, it's long-term for me. I want to buy the properties. I want to hold them, rent them out, and just let them sit and get that capital growth. Melinda, obviously, being on the ground here with our buyer's agency side of it, I mean, the supply and demand side, what we're seeing at the moment as well.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing for a lot of investors is they are competing with very emotional owner occupiers when they're looking for quality investment properties. And one thing that we always talk about is if you're looking at a property that doesn't have other buyers looking at the property, there must be a reason for that, because any property that's listed for sale right now across Brisbane is in very high demand because stock is about 30 to 40% below our long-term volumes in terms of listings. So there's fewer opportunities to choose from, and we're seeing a lot of B and C grade stock, so things on Main Road, things that might be in flood impacted locations. They are sitting for longer, and buyers are really attracted to quality. So when we see quality, that is, you know, a good home in a location that's desirable, that doesn't have these impacts, it is very competitively sought after. So as an investor, a lot of people that inquire about our services say, well, we want to buy something under market value. And I always laugh because I think, well, actually, if you're buying something under market value, you are creating the new market. So that is market value. But at the end of the day, it's about finding an asset that's going to continue to perform over the next 20 or 30 years, because for most investors, that's the life cycle of a property that they may own. So it's about identifying a location that's going to have the capital growth drivers over that period of time. And, you know, we study Brisbane, we know Brisbane very well, and we can look historically back at the performance at a suburb level to get an indication of which locations have outperformed others in terms of capital growth, but also in terms of rental price growth, because as an investor, it's the combined return that we need to consider, not just how a property might be growing in value, but how that rental income may have changed over a number of years. And, you know, through no fault of property investors, there are certainly locations that tenants are finding it much more challenging from an affordability perspective to continue to afford the rental accommodation in a particular area. And that in itself puts a cap on what a tenant is able to pay. And that comes down to the demographic of who lives in a particular location. And yet there's other locations in Brisbane where, you know, at the moment, you know, tenants will pay more than an advertised price to secure a property because they have the capacity to do so. So that's where competition can come into play. And we sometimes see, you know, tenants will, because there might be five or six applications on a property, and one group might pay more than others because of competition, but they've got the capacity to do so. So it comes down to understanding what you're buying and why you're buying it, and ensuring that you're targeting a location where there are low vacancy rates, where there are low volumes of investment properties compared to owner-occupied properties in the location. And all of this data is available to anyone looking to invest in property. And there's huge opportunity out there in the Brisbane market to help alleviate some of these supply issues. And, you know, from an investor's perspective, unfortunately, because of the current supply and demand imbalance, you know, from a tenant's perspective, that's really hard because that does put upward pressure on rents. But from a landlord's perspective, you know, that increased rent does help to cover and offset the higher interest rate environment that we're currently in as well. So I think there's so many pieces to the puzzle that as an investor, it's not just about identifying a budget and then doing a search on realestate.com or domain for what exists within that budget in Greater Brisbane. That's not the right approach. It's about understanding the strategy and the numbers and then looking at the suburb, but then also identifying which part of the suburb and why.
You need to work with the students from PIFA, don't you, Nicola? These qualified property investment advisors.
Yes, exactly. But I was just thinking about the only, you know, if you're going to look for the only good thing from the rental crisis, is the fact that it is motivating more young people to transition out of the rental market. And it's, you know, and even in my own family circle, you know, my niece at the weekend mentioned that, you know, her and her partner had been trying to source a rental property, haven't been able to do so, and so they are actually actively going to purchase, you know, hopefully in the next 6 months, maybe with a little bit of help from the bank mum and dad, but because they weren't able to secure a rental property, And probably the numbers, based on the numbers she said that they were prepared to pay in rent and in regards to probably what they'll end up buying, it probably might be the difference between $100 and $150 a week. And plus they had a dog, they've got a dog, so it was just they were just getting knocked back left, right and centre. So if there's any bright side to it, it is that, you know, we are seeing that next generation of homeowners. And, you know, these people are, you know, my niece is only 22, so a younger generation maybe helped, might have read a few of my books as well that I might have given her at Christmas time and said, come on, because she was good. Having trouble back then, and I said, come on, read these books, darling, and you know, see what you and Nick can do.
Yes.
I think that's, but that often happens, the cycle, right?
Absolutely.
Rents go up so much, and then the equation, the affordability equation goes, well, actually, we can do that. What was interesting the other day, and I'd be interested in your insights, Antonia, I noticed, because I live in the West End area, right? I've been noticing a lot more for lease signs, and I'm wandering around the other day with my dog, and I'm like going, why is there for lease signs in West End? Like, we're in a rental crisis. But then I thought maybe they're just missing out on having the advertising, because clearly properties are just, there's, you know, are we really saying that there's actually properties sitting there vacant in West End for lease? Or is it a sign of that maybe some investors, maybe it is a little high, the rental cost, or maybe it's just that, so, I mean, you know, agents have kind of gone, well, I need some advertising happening. What do you think? Just to put you on the spot, but it was just something that happened the other day because it was noticeable.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen four lease signs for such a long time.
I think what happens eventually, though, is that you tap out, don't you? You reach that cap where you just can't afford to pay more.
Yes.
And we have seen a bit of that where people have just gone, I'm out of here, that I'm tapping out, I'm going to go move back in with mum and dad or move in with a mate or go into a co-tenancy arrangement. It is unusual to see a for lease sign in this market. They are getting snapped up very quickly before you've even had time to put a signboard up. And we're seeing still at an inspection, there'll often be a queue of people.
Absolutely.
Multiple applicants. What's really interesting about offering more, Melinda, you were talking about people offering more, that's one of the things that the Queensland government has said.
Trying to stop.
That they're going to, so rental bidding is already unlawful in Queensland, but there's nothing stopping someone offering more, but they propose to make it an offence to actually accept an offer that is greater, so.
It's interesting. Interfering in the free market.
When you say they move back in with mum and dad.
Yes.
And then I think mum and dad get sick of it and mum and dad bank step in and help them buy and get them out of the house again, maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah.
We've seen some very active bidding at auction by mum and dad.
Loans and things, you know, because it is very, very difficult.
It is tough.
For that deposit.
Very
it really,
tough.
It really is.
Very
it's
tough.
Not. Yeah, there's no two ways that it's not.
We've said a lot about that. For someone to have to get together 20% deposit to avoid, lender's mortgage insurance, that's a really big ask when we look at what property prices are doing. And not everyone has the benefit of having Bank of Mum and Dad,
right? That's right.
Yeah.
So I think what's concerning is when you look at the data at the moment, all across the country, by the way, young people are feeling like this aspiration of home ownership, it just feels so unachievable. And I think we really need to look at ways that we can be thinking in a more innovative way around how we can overcome that really significant obstacle. Because I think we know if you can find a way to deal with that hefty upfront deposit, most people, if they've been able to successfully pay rent, can successfully manage a mortgage.
Yep. Yes.
So I think we need to see politicians thinking about that in a more innovative way.
I'm going to throw a question out, and I'll give you a little bit of a warning on this, just a heads up.
You.
So polish the crystal ball in the middle of the table, because the question I'm going to throw out is, what do you see with the Brisbane property market heading in the next 12 months and then also in the next 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm fairly positive, as you know, and I am an investor and I believe in property. I live, breathe it. That's our life.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's positive. I really, really think that the Brisbane market has a lot of legs left in it. And obviously long-term wise, so short-term wise, I do see great opportunity for people to buy in the right location and buy the right property. long-term wise, and that's the mindset obviously of the investor that we have, of that long-term investing side of things. We've got the Olympic Games coming. Mm-hmm. I know people, we talk about it a lot, but at the end of the day, it's going to happen. Mm. And hopefully it's going to happen in a big way here in Brisbane. So I do see that positive side at short-term and long-term. And I do think if people want to make the most of this, when you can afford to buy the property in Brisbane, I think you should buy it. So that's my bit. Next.
I agree. There you go. I think, you know, as long as we have this supply and demand imbalance, then one way for it to go. You know, I don't do forecasting in regards to percentages, but I certainly can't see. And look, Queensland is a big state. It has quite diverse property markets and quite diverse local economies. So mm-hmm. you're always going to have some areas that will perform better than most. And those usually are diverse areas that have, you know, multiple industries. So there will be some areas that do better than others. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on a couple of other factors, there might be a couple of areas that don't do very well if they have single industry towns or, you know, regional areas. But as I say, while we have an excess of demand over supply, I really can't envisage there being anything but good times for Brisbane in the next 12 months and for the foreseeable future.
I'm always careful when I answer questions like that because I'm conscious of, again, being accused of self-interest, and it's always dangerous to crystal ball glaze. Mm. But I will say that when we look at the data, which is objective, factual information, it's really difficult to see how you wouldn't do well investing in Brisbane. You mentioned the Olympics. You only have to look at things like the lack of new supply that we are seeing, the ongoing very strong demand, the fact that we do have an Olympic Games coming up, which of course will involve some really big infrastructure projects mm-hmm. and bring lots of new people to town. Mm-hmm. Then we've got still very strong interstate migration, international migration. When you think about the fact that Brisbane will, after the Olympic Games and in the lead up, be exposed to not just Australia but to the international stage. So when you package that all up, it's difficult to see how you wouldn't do well investing in Brisbane. And what we also know is when people move to Queensland, often they do move to Brisbane.
Yep.
And even though, yes, we are starting to see some people are making the shift to living away from the city or even moving to regional Queensland, we still know that the majority of people, when they move here, choose to live in Brisbane. So I think when you combine all of those ingredients together, I would say you could be pretty confident that we're going to continue to see Brisbane moving in an upward trajectory.
Glenda, do you want to add a quick 1 minute in?
Look, supply and demand is always the conversation that we talk about each month on our podcast, Brisbane Property Podcast. We do a monthly update on what's actually happening on the ground and what the data is showing. And we are still in a state of very low supply and strong demand. And therefore, when we're tracking on a month-to-month basis, there is an upward trajectory. I don't think we're going to see growth in the next 12 months as strong as we've seen growth in the last 12 months. However, there is just that price pressure. And whilst we've got that price pressure, we will continue to see the trend to be upward. And certainly 10 years from now, we'll probably all look back and regret not actually positioning ourselves in more property, because as we all do, we look back 10 years ago and feel how good would it have been if we had the money to purchase, or we maybe perhaps had the money to purchase, but we chose not to because we were fearful or we were, you know, a bit unsure or a bit uncertain. So it's a great time to invest, but not all locations will perform equally. So it's about getting the right advice about which locations may have the best upside opportunity. And that's going to be very individual based on individual circumstances.
Yeah, I don't think there'd be too many people that could look. So if I look back now, I wish I had. Because I think we all say that. I know I'd probably say it.
We've all got that story.
I wish I had. So
yeah, exactly.
Look, obviously, as I say, there's those opportunities there. If any our viewers or listeners need help, reach out to the team here at Streamline Property Buyers. We're more than happy to chat. It's free to talk to us. And then if we can help out, we'd love to. But Look, I just want to say a really big thank you, Nicola and Antonia. Melinda, thank you very much for joining us here on the Brisbane Property Panel tonight. And thank you very much for all your work you do as well for the industry. It's hard work, it's long hours, but it is appreciated within the industry. I know that. But yeah, thank you very much for all the hard work you do, and thank you very much for coming on our panel and sharing some of your knowledge with our viewers and our listeners.
Thanks so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Excellent. Well, that's a wrap from us. Again, hopefully that's some good information from everyone. And we will talk again soon. So thanks very much for tuning in. Bye for now.
Thanks for tuning in today. Please remember, everything we have spoken about on this podcast is general in nature, and we always recommend that you obtain independent advice in relation to your specific circumstances. If you liked today's episode, don't forget to subscribe or leave us a review on iTunes. And of course, tell your friends about us. If you would like to get in contact, please visit www.brisbanepropertypodcast.com.au or email us at info@brisbanepropertypodcast.com.au. Feel free to send in any questions, and we will try to answer them in future episodes.